Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Prognosis. I'm Laura Carlson. It's day 131 since coronavirus was declared a global pandemic. Today's main story: Latin America has been hard hit by the pandemic. But there's one small country in the region that is quietly beating COVID, despite bordering countries where the virus rages. But first, here's what happened in virus news today. U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, and other GOP leaders began hammering out the details of a roughly $1 trillion Republican plan for a new round of virus relief. That will be their opening bid as they begin negotiations with Democrats, who've already put out an expansive $3.5 trillion proposal. The two sides remain far apart on many of the particulars, including McConnell's determination to include liability limits for businesses, schools, and other organizations. Hong Kong reported 66 new local virus cases, down from 83 on Sunday. The new outbreak has now infected 560 local people in 16 days. Alarming health officials. About a third of infections are unlinked to confirmed cases or existing outbreaks, signaling that hidden chains of transmission are widespread. In light of the outbreak, the financial hub is extending restaurant restrictions, as well as gym and bar closures, by another week, and it's expanding mask requirements. Finally, a coronavirus vaccine the University of Oxford is developing with AstraZeneca showed promising results in early human testing. The vaccine shows what's called a dual immune response. That means it increased levels of both protective neutralizing antibodies and immune T cells that target the virus. That's according to results that were published today in the Lancet Medical Journal. And now for today's main story. The small South American nation of Uruguay is best known for its grass-fed beef and Atlantic beaches. But the country of 3.5 million people has another distinction. It seems to have dodged the worst of the COVID-19 outbreak, despite being nestled between hotspot countries. The country has seen just 1,000 or so cases since the pandemic began, and only 33 deaths. Ken Parks reports the reasons may have as much to do with its policies from years past as its present-day virus response.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. it starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
What is the secret to Uruguay's success? First, it acted fast. President Luis Lacalle-Pou ordered a voluntary lockdown and closed international borders less than a month after taking office March 1st. Speaking at a seminar in June, Lacalle-Pou said his decision to appeal to his compatriots' responsible exercise of liberty, as he refers to his voluntary lockdown policy, wasn't an easy one. It was March 23rd, and his advisors had provided infection forecasts ranging from 1,250 cases to as many as 250,000 cases.
The decision to say no to obligatory quarantine was a little more complex based on the data we had.
Of equal or greater importance are Uruguay's institutional assets. It's one of the wealthiest nations in the region, with a mature political system that sees little to gain from sacrificing the country to advance partisan agendas. Uruguay is also reaping dividends from the heavy investments in public health care and social programs the left-wing Broadfront Party made during its 15 years in power. The government's strategy of widespread testing, contact tracing, and voluntary lockdown is paying off. Most schools are now holding classes, and malls, shops, restaurants, and government offices are open. Active COVID cases have held below or just above 100 since early June. Uruguay has managed all that, even though it counts COVID hotspots, Argentina and Brazil, as neighbors. I recently spoke with Public Health Minister Daniel Salinas about Uruguay's success in containing the pandemic. Minister Salinas, a medical doctor, urged his compatriots to appreciate and defend the country's COVID gains.
Uruguay has to appreciate and defend its status. It has to be part of our identity. It's like in football, we have to win this World Cup. That doesn't mean we have won the battle, because at any moment something can happen that is beyond our control. The reopening of classes didn't generate one additional case. The reopening of shopping centers hasn't created spikes in activity. The opening of hotels and restaurants hasn't created problems.
La reapertura de hoteles y restaurantes no ha generado problemas.
Uruguay has increased entry requirements for citizens and foreign residents arriving from abroad by air, ferry, or land. Authorities require new arrivals provide a negative COVID test taken no more than 72 hours before traveling. After that, arrivals have to spend at least a week in quarantine and undergo another test. Uruguay and Brazil are also coordinating their COVID response measures along their border. Minister Salinas says the measures aim to prevent further outbreaks like those in the provincial capitals of Rivera and Trinity y Tres that were linked to Brazil, where many Uruguayans who live along the border go to shop.
We are shielding the country from the situation abroad, but in the end, we depend on the personal conduct of our citizens, because starting from one case, there were 97 cases in Trinity y Tres, which is a lesson. Look, Trinity y Tres is a very small city that had 10% of Uruguay's cases.
Uruguay also faces the challenge of reviving a tourism industry whose beaches, spas, and casinos catered to more than 1.7 million Argentines and almost 500,000 Brazilians last year. I asked Minister Salinas if Uruguay is going to open its tourism industry next summer.
For sure there is going to be domestic tourism, but conditions to enter the country aren't going to change. I hope there is a vaccine by then.
While Uruguay is outperforming most of its peers in terms of infection and mortality rates, the pandemic has caused significant hardship for ordinary Uruguayans who have lost their jobs or struggled to keep their businesses afloat in the face of declining sales. While the unemployment rate has actually dropped below 10% since the start of the pandemic, economists attribute that to many of the jobless not actively looking for work. Osvaldo, 56, owns and operates a fruit and vegetable stand that serves five neighborhood street markets in the capital, Montevideo. I spoke with him recently at a morning street market in the neighborhood of Positos about how the pandemic has affected his business.
La feria se nutre más bien de gente de más de 40 años.
The market lives mainly off people more than 40 years old. This is a morning market and active people are at work. In general, older people, parents, and if family or grandparents come, those are the people most affected, or at least the ones that have been declared at risk due to their age. It has an impact because older people don't come to the market, so there are fewer clients and sales draw.
Entonces, bajan las ventas, hay menos clientela.
Osvaldo says his sales are just 60% of what they were before the pandemic struck in early March. On a positive note, he notices that foot traffic in the market has been picking up for about a month. Federico runs a butcher shop in the traditional middle-class neighborhood of Villa Dolores in Montevideo. Uruguayans are among the biggest meat eaters on the planet, consuming 105 pounds of beef per person last year. I asked Federico how meat consumption has changed in the neighborhood during the pandemic.
Meat consumption has held up or even increased a little. Places for eating out were closed or people are spending more time at home and have more time to cook. Fortunately, our company has benefited from the pandemic because sales have increased.
Por suerte a lo que es nuestro grupo le ha venido bien esto de la pandemia, digamos, porque las ventas han crecido.
Uruguay has received international recognition for its handling of the pandemic. I asked Federico how this newfound attention makes him feel.
One feels a lot of pride. I think things have been done right here since day zero, and people have been extra careful. So seeing them talk about us abroad is always a source of pride.
Uruguay so far has managed to contain the pandemic, while its larger neighbors struggle to get a grip on the disease. However, success can prove short-lived due to COVID's uncanny ability to quickly spread, as illustrated by two outbreaks in provincial cities and an important outbreak in recent days at a hospital in the capital of Montevideo. Uruguay has won many battles against the pandemic, but it's too early to declare victory just yet. Perhaps the reopening of its international borders at some point down the road would be one sure sign that Uruguay has COVID on the ropes.
That was Ken Parks in Montevideo. And that's it for our show today. For coverage of the outbreak from 120 bureaus around the world, visit Bloomberg.com/coronavirus. And if you like the show, please leave us a review and a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It's the best way to help more listeners find our global reporting. The Prognosis Daily Edition is produced by Topher Forges, Jordan Gaspure, Magnus Henriksen, and me, Laura Carlson. Today's main story was reported by Ken Parks. Original music by Leo Sidrin. Our editors are Rick Schein and Francesca Levy. Francesca Levy is Bloomberg's head of podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.